You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
New models of electric vehicles are scheduled to be introduced to consumers this year, and we thought that we would take a look at how New York City and other urban environments are preparing for their arrival. We're joined now by Neil Parikh, Senior Policy Advisor at the Mayor's Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability and lead author of a City Commission report on electric cars in New York City, and by Dr. Tom Turrentine, Director of the Plug-in Hybrid Electric Vehicle Research Center at UC Davis in California. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
And I throw this out to both of you. I guess I should start with Tom, because Tom's talking to us by phone and he can't see any eye signals and stuff. Are there as many cars per person in New York as in other major American cities? Do you know?
I think that there are fewer cars per person in New York. We're famous in transportation circles as actually how many transit trips people take in New York, which is about three times as much as other cities.
Do electric vehicles make more sense in a city where people don't drive great distances, Neil?
You know, that was one of the things that we actually did spend a lot of time researching over the last year. To answer your previous question, it's about 44% of households in New York City actually own vehicles, which is much less than the national average. It's about 90%.
Why are the streets clogged all the time?
Well, that's a very different question that we've been trying to address for quite some time. I guess the basic answer to your question is it does make sense. You know, we spend a lot of time talking to New York households that own vehicles or that potentially would own vehicles. And over the last year, and we did a quantitative survey as well, and we really did find that there's a lot of pent-up demand for electric vehicles.
Well, what kinds of people, Tom, are typically attracted to emerging commercial technologies like the electric car? I've read that one out of every five cars sold in Berkeley is a Prius. I would assume that's a lot higher than Los Angeles or Montana.
Yes. Well, Berkeley certainly has a high percentage. Actually, the whole Bay Area is pretty high. Some of the cities, Portland, Seattle, parts of Los Angeles, if you look in its sort of micro-regional distribution of hybrids. And it tends to be people who are very interested in technology, people who are interested in environmental issues. Although it's actually, when you go out and study, I've spent 20 years studying these types of populations, and you go out and finally interview people, you find a much greater diversity than you initially think.
Although the West has really taken the lead in electric cars, hasn't it?
Well, there aren't that many electric cars yet. With hybrids, certainly the market in California has been higher and led the nation and even maybe parts of the world. There are a few other places catching up now to the market segment in California, which can be in some areas as high as 10% of the sedan market.
Neil, in your research, did you pinpoint one specific kind of New Yorker who would be more likely to be an early adopter of an EV?
Definitely, and I think it's exactly what Tom was saying just now. It's really based on the attitudes of the average driver, and so it would be someone who would really be trying to espouse an environmentally friendly lifestyle, who wanted to go green, for example.
And who had a certain amount of money available?
To some degree, yes. It's also someone who is attracted to the latest and greatest technology in vehicles as a whole. You know, so there's the first person on the block who wants to use GPS technology in a vehicle.
Are they more likely to be clustered in neighborhoods like the Upper West Side, Greenwich Village, or Park Slope?
No, it's a little bit counterintuitive. We had gone into the analysis, the market research study, thinking that that it would really be determined by household income, by where you park, how often you drive, and we really found, kind of coming out of this study, that it really would be in all five boroughs.
Your report also found that the number of early adopters will likely outstrip the available supply of EVs for at least 5 years. Roughly how many people and cars are we talking about here?
So we estimate, and you know, it's always a little bit fuzzy as you go out more than a couple of years, but in the next 5 years, we estimate that there could be as many as 15% of new car sales that would be electric vehicles. That would be about 50 to 60,000 vehicles in total in the city. But that is an upper boundary. There are a lot of assumptions that go into that.
Tom, how large a market share do you anticipate that electric cars will have in 5 to 10 years?
Well, there's sort of upper and lower bounds to this. The market's an interesting word there, because I think, like Neil said, it's there's actually more buyers out there than there'll be vehicles available. And so it's really determined by the rollout of manufacturers. This is a whole new industry with a whole new set of parts chain all the way back that manufacturers have to put together. So initially there will be constraints on the availability, and so we won't in the first 5 years be able to meet demand. If you remember hybrids, there was quite a wait in the first few years of when hybrids are available on the market. Months of waiting lists. So I think we'll see the same thing with electric.
But there are two different kinds of electric cars, one like the Nissan Leaf and the Chevy Volt. They're shooting for mass market middle class buyers. And then you have Tesla Motors, which is aiming for people who can afford a car that costs way over $100,000. Do you have any information about how the public is responding to these different kinds of vehicles?
Well, certainly Nissan has currently an ambitious plan for electric vehicles, a vehicle which gets about 100 miles of range, and they are, you know, hoping to bring thousands of these to the market each year over the next few years, and they're aiming really at that middle, the main market, a vehicle which is about the same size as a Prius interior room. It gets about, as I said, 100 miles of range. That will be here in a couple of years, and then also the Volt is also aiming sort of at that middle market. It's quite a different vehicle from the Leaf, with a range, what we call a range extender, so that you get 40 miles of electric, and then after the 40 miles of electric is used up, the vehicle will go to its hybrid mode. And so that vehicle will not have a limitation of 100 miles on its battery. So, well, it has 40 miles limitation on the battery, but it goes on to use gasoline.
But that sounds almost like an ideal car, Neil, for New York City, because people rarely drive more than 40 miles on a typical day.
I think that's right. At the same time, there's a little bit of what, you know, in the industry is being called range anxiety. So people who, you know, 95% of the time would be traveling less than 40 miles a day, but that 5% would lead them to perhaps purchase something like the Volt, like Tom was mentioning, which has a backup gasoline engine, just in case, you know, in that 5% of their trips, they would actually like to go to Philadelphia or beyond without having to charge.
When you did your study, did you find out that people knew a lot about electric cars?
Yeah, actually, surprisingly, more than we had initially thought. I think there's a very strong base knowledge of electric vehicles as a technology. Now, when you probe a little bit further and you talk about and you ask questions about the difference between one type of vehicle or the other, or you talk about the benefits and you ask them about the performance benefits compared to even a Prius-type hybrid, there's less certainty, less awareness there. And I think that's one of the things that came out of this study. I think manufacturers, as well as cities, states, the public sector writ large, will have to spend a lot of time helping educate consumers if we really want to see this technology take off.
Well, I really haven't read all that much to give me some sense of just what it would mean. Tom, how did the economics of these new EVs work out? Is electricity a lot cheaper to operate on a long term than a gas vehicle?
Well, it's a different economics, right? So we talk in sometimes in academics, we like to talk about lifetime cost of the vehicle. Certainly, electricity is cheaper in many places across the United States. Electricity might be about one third the cost of gasoline to operate the car. On the other hand, the battery on board the vehicle is still quite expensive, and really is a barrier still to the mass market. We're sort of on a new frontier here with batteries, and the mass production of these batteries in these vehicles is brand new. So the understanding of their costs is not fully public, and is also being reduced as they move to mass production.
But I've heard about $12,000 a vehicle, and then you'd have to buy a 240-volt charging unit that would cost another $1,000 at least.
That's right.
Or $1,500. We're talking about the initial cost being rather high.
That's right. Initial costs and initial costs are an interesting issue for vehicles. Initial costs of vehicles have gone up over many years for cars relative to the operating costs of the vehicle, which have gone down. So in a sense, the electric vehicles they offer a similar higher upfront cost, but lower costs over time.
Well, how long would you have to own one of these cars to see any kind of saving?
Well, you'd have to know what the price of gasoline was in the next 5 or 10 years, wouldn't you? That's the big bet. If some people think there are analysts who think that gasoline and oil will stay about the same price it is now, and there's others who think it will go up double or even triple over the next 10 years. So there's, depending on which camp you're in, I've watched that. I'm not an expert in that area, but I've watched every expert fail to predict it for 20 years.
And, well, another argument, Neil, would be that if electric cars take off, then gas prices will come down because they're going to have to compete.
To some degree, though, I think electricity prices are always going to be more competitive than gas prices. They move more slowly, and we've seen that over the last 30 years. And even in New York City, where we have one of the highest electricity rates in the country, I think it still will, over the lifetime of the vehicle, still save the consumer money.
My guests are Neil Parikh of the Mayor's Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability, and Tom Turrentine, who is with the Plug-in Hybrid Electric Vehicle Research Center. And Tom, you're an anthropologist, aren't you?
That's right.
So have you been checking into the cultural responses to electric cars?
Well, that's really how I got into this business, to look at understanding Americans. A lot of people talk about the long love affair with the vehicle, and a lot of people think this is sort of a difficult area to make change. At the same time, Americans have often embraced new technologies. It's sort of a market issue. Some parts of the market get pretty excited about these new technologies, and you were talking about cost. The cost may not add up, but that isn't a lot of times why people buy the vehicles. They buy them because they like them, and they're excited about them. And so our cars tied up in our identity, we always talk about, and certainly tied up in people's perceptions of each other and what is the good life.
Well, I would like to play a clip now of New York City Transit Commissioner Jeanette Suddy Khan speaking on the Brian Lehrer Show earlier this month. Let's take a listen.
And coming up on the Leonard Lopate Show later today, they're going to be talking about advantages and disadvantages of more electric cars in New York City, and discuss what kind of major infrastructure changes the city would need to make to accommodate them. Do you have a position on that?
Well, we're trying to make it as easy as possible to get people around in active, healthy ways. We've got a crisis of obesity in the city right now, and a crisis of diabetes. And so what we're trying to do is make it easier for people to walk around, for people to bike around, for people to take transit.
So you don't care if they don't have as much of a carbon footprint or not, these cars?
Well, we're not looking to add more cars to the streets of New York right now. So,
or
again,
make infrastructure changes to accommodate
electric cars. The mayor is actually got a program in place where he's looking at that. The mayor's Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability is exploring all that, and we will continue to look for ways to bring greener infrastructure to the streets of New York.
It sounds like there are two different things going on in the city administration. Neil, you seem to be representing something quite different.
No, actually, and Commissioner Sadiq Khan and I have worked a lot, and our staffs have worked a lot together, both in this and other sustainable transportation efforts, and I think she's exactly right. You know, as we were thinking about the opportunities for electric vehicles, there are clear environmental benefits, both in terms of air quality emissions, as well as the carbon footprint. At the same time, we don't want to go so far as to encourage additional usage of vehicles. I mean, it's a stated goal of the mayor to reduce congestion in the streets, and one way to do that is to offer attractive choices beyond just a vehicle in terms of mobility.
Tom, do you think that there's a risk that in promoting EVs, we're still promoting people to drive? Wouldn't some sustainability proponents argue that we should be encouraging people to take public transportation or to bicycle?
I agree. I think there needs to be a continued emphasis on walking and transit and cycling and all those things. I think that actually electric transportation might in some ways fit a little bit better in that. You know, the thing about electric vehicles is there are no emissions at the sidewalk level for people. If you have a crowded city street in New York City, You can think about all those tailpipes going away, and a little bit of the noise also, engine sounds. So you can have a little bit quieter city. You have a lot cleaner air, which people are out walking and biking in.
And I think it's not a zero-sum game. I think you could do both, and I think we in New York City are trying to establish that path forward, encouraging bicycling and walking at the same time, looking at, you know, we have to be realistic. There are going to be a certain number of New Yorkers that will continue to use vehicles. For those people, we want to make sure that they're the most efficient form of transportation possible.
We have to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll look at how we're going to get all that electricity to power these cars. My guests are Neil Parikh, Mayor's Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability, and Tom Turrentine, a Plug-in Hybrid Electric Vehicle Research Center at UC Davis in California. Stay with us. We're back with our discussion of electric vehicles, which will soon be on the market. Neil Parikh is a senior policy advisor at the Mayor's Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability and lead author of a city commissioned report on electric cars in New York City. And Dr. Tom Turrentine is the director of the Plug-in Hybrid Electric Vehicle Research Center at UC Davis in California. And also joining us now is Joseph P. Oates, who's vice president of energy management at Con Edison. And thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Because we're going to have to find out very soon whether we even going to have enough electricity to handle all of this. Neil, your study also found that a dense public charging network will not be a strong priority for early adopters. Does that mean the city won't be installing things like curbside charges anytime soon?
That's right. I mean, I think what we found, what we heard from the respondents of our survey was that where they would most likely be able to charge or look to charge, seek to charge, would be at home or in a commercial garage, basically the places in the morning and at night where they would actually store their vehicle. It's not really on the curbside where for an hour or two they're doing an errand, so they park on the street. That's at least for the first 5 to 7 years. I think after that we're going to have to reevaluate what the market looks like and perhaps take a different position. But for now, I think we're looking at it from more of a private charging infrastructure perspective.
Joseph, the California Public Utilities Commission is bringing together utilities, automakers, and charging station companies to form a consensus on electric cars. Is something similar happening in New York City?
I don't think there's a formal, organized effort similar to California, but there are a number of initiatives that Con Edison is participating in with other utilities and automakers, with others in the utility industry. So it may not be exactly like California, but I think we are equally interested in trying to learn what is the potential for electric vehicles and is our system ready to handle the needs of customers who decide to use electric vehicles.
And one thing the city identified as one of our early next steps coming out of the survey was to formalize a similar discussion. Rather than having each manufacturer in a kind of a one-off relationship engage the city and the utilities here, we wanted to formalize that and bring in commercial garage operators, consumers, et cetera.
Well, many apartments in New York are old and the wiring is old. Does that present issues for power lines that are going to be depending on home charging stations? Joseph?
Sure. So I think from Con Edison's perspective, we need to make sure that the different components of the electric system that we bring to the customer's meter are going to be adequate to meet the collective needs of the entire city in terms of using electric vehicles, but also in particular areas. And I think that's one of the benefits of the study that Neil orchestrated is to see where these folks are going to be, because that really does matter to us as the local utility.
In California, Tom, what times of day do utilities want electric car owners to charge their vehicles?
Well, the thing they really want is at night, when the power grid demand is lowest. That's the sort of classic scenario we picture as people charging. And for the most part, in studies of electric vehicle users over the last couple of decades, that seems to be the pattern. And I also agree with Neil that there's the sort of need for on-street or that sort of charging. It's not that great. Really, we discover, you know, 90% always of charging needs for drivers happens at the place they park their car overnight.
Now, Joseph, isn't there an issue in New York with the power lines needing to rest or something like that during off-peak hours?
That's actually, yes, Leonard, it is a potential issue for us. We're kind of unique in terms of the utility system here in New York City compared to the most of the country. Most of the country has electric lines that tend to be overhead mounted to poles. We have most of the infrastructure in New York City is underground. And a concern that we have is we design the amount of cables and the size of the cables underground, keeping in mind that they need a cooling off period. They need to be able to handle a peak demand, but then have that demand come down significantly so that the cables can cool down and then be ready the next day to meet the peak requirements of customers.
So nighttime isn't the right time for charging up your car in New York.
Well, I would say that nighttime is better than the daytime, because if you had all the charging in the daytime, we would not only have to have enough electric infrastructure to meet the current needs of customers, we'd also need to meet the incremental need associated with electric vehicles. So what we're hoping is, as a smarter grid is designed and as customers can actually respond to perhaps real-time signals from the grid, they might be able to modify and move their charging to periods when it's not going to be a problem for our system, but perhaps also when the cost of electricity is going to be lower.
Who's going to be responsible for making those changes to the power grid?
So in terms of the showing customers the real-time price, right now the electricity market in New York does produce a price for electricity every single hour. Part of the problem is most customers don't have a meter that shows them what that real-time price is. So we're thinking, as a way for us to learn, we've engaged in a couple of pilot programs to look at how customers might react to seeing a different price over a period of time. So I think some of it's going to require customers electing to do that. Some of that's going to require us as utilities demonstrating that these smarter meters do produce benefits for customers before the regulator in New York would authorize us to do a wholesale large program to put them in place.
Neil, is this something that you addressed in your study?
Yeah, we worked closely with Con Ed about that. I mean, I don't think the scope of the study was really to identify demand, not really to kind of look at the implementation concerns. But what Joe is saying is exactly right.
Tom, people often think of electric cars as being environmentally friendly, but isn't that largely dependent on what kind of power plants they're getting their electricity from?
Well, that's a really important point of analysis, and this analysis varies across regions, of course, depending on how power is produced in that region. In California, we have a pretty clean electric grid, and so the power is pretty green here, very green in the Northwest where they have a lot of hydroelectric, not as green in the mid parts of the country where there's a lot of coal, and I think New York, I won't say for New York because you got an expert there.
Well, the Silicon Valley-based company Better Place has set up shop in Denmark and Israel, if I understand it right.
That's right.
Their battery switching stations are estimated to cost over $1 million, which seems incredibly expensive. But they're planning to use wind power to create all this new electricity?
Well, that would be in Denmark, but I think that's sort of a general plan in Denmark and not really Better Place's plan. Denmark itself has been interested very much in using electric vehicles because they get a lot of wind events, large wind events, and they're hoping that this is part of the sort of long-term ideas about electric vehicles is you can store some of that wind. Wind's intermittent; it comes and goes, and has sort of large events, and you need somewhere to store that energy. And if you had Denmark's hoping down the road that if they had enough electric vehicles that they could actually store that wind energy, that's sort of apart from Project Better Place. The battery swapping, which is a whole another thing is happening, is being tested in Israel and is quite expensive and we're just watching to see what the results of that experiment will be. That requires a lot of cooperation between a lot of people to create what is a complex robotic operation.
Joseph, what's being done in New York by Con Ed? Are there plans? Because there's going to be so much more demand for electricity if these cars take off, will we be able to produce the electricity in an environmentally friendly way?
Sure. Let me address that in two ways. In terms of the infrastructure, the actual wires and equipment that actually allows electricity to be delivered to customers, we monitor our demand and update those forecasts every year and then revise our capital infrastructure investments accordingly. So right now, based upon the information that came out of Neil's study, we don't see all that many vehicles coming over the next couple of years. So we believe that that our system is going to be adequate to be able to deliver electricity to consumers. New York State actually, a couple of years ago, restructured the industry so the utilities don't tend to own the power plants, and we have a competitive market that where electricity is produced and then delivered to customers. And right now, we do have an adequate supply of electricity both in New York City and in New York State. And New York, unlike the rest, a lot of the rest of the country, doesn't use a lot of coal. So most of the power that we have comes from natural gas, nuclear, and hydroelectric power.
Tom, in the late 1990s, didn't San Francisco promote electric cars? Can you tell us about their experience with those PIVCO cars?
Oh, yeah, the PIVCOs. Actually, I was involved in that experiment, and PIVCO was a small company from Norway, sort of in a industrial effort to find a way to use more aluminum and plastic at the time, and the Norwegian government invested in that, and San Francisco obtained a number of these to, and they linked them with their Bay Area Rapid Transit system so that the vehicles could be sort of part of that system. I think what the lesson I went away from being sort of the evaluator on that project was that small electric vehicles could fit with urban transit systems. Interesting enough, it's the parking that's really drives a lot of this, and I think our experience there was people not only like using the vehicles, but they were given a great parking spot near the front of the transit station that made all the difference to everyone. So if you do want to have electric transportation in a dense urban environment, you can use parking policy to switch over the technology if that's is better for your city.
Joseph, what do you envision happening when people start using electric cars? What would Con Ed do? What would it make available to people who have to charge their cars?
I think unlike some other utilities that really are responsible for all elements of getting electricity generated and produced and delivered to customers, I think the role we see Con Edison having right now is making sure that infrastructure is there to be able to deliver electricity from the generators who make it to where the customers want to use that.
But what would that mean, putting a plug in my wall unit and then running a wire out to the street? That sounds kind of crazy.
Yeah, I don't think we see ourselves doing that. So we're going to make sure that whoever wants to put those plugs in place or those charging stations in place, perhaps even, you know, making them part of a parking meter in the future, if that could be arranged, we would make sure that we would bring our infrastructure to wherever those charging stations were going to be installed.
So is that something the city is considering, Neil?
Which part of that?
Where are we going to put these charging stations?
Definitely. And I think...
Would they be attached to parking meters?
Well, to step back a little bit, the first place I think we're going to help consumers are is really installing the charging infrastructure at home and in the commercial garages where most New Yorkers actually park their vehicles. Down the road, if we were to decide to invest in curbside infrastructure, we would have to look at where demand would be located. I think before you even looked at a dense curbside infrastructure, you would have to look at kind of nodes of either transportation or shopping centers, places like Citi Field or Yankee Stadium, places where people would actually park for a few hours their vehicles and would need charging infrastructure there. You could also look at the commuter rail system. You know, it may be difficult to find space near some of our subway stops, especially in Manhattan, for example, but you could imagine potentially having access to larger parking lots in our Long Island Railroad, for example.
Joseph, I know you have to go. I want to thank you so much for joining us to talk about the Con Edison part of this whole story. Joseph P. Oates is Vice President of Energy Management at Con Edison. And we are talking about what's going to happen when electric cars actually start coming into the city. How prepared will we be? And my guests, along with Joseph Oates, are Neil Parikh, who is Senior Policy Advisor at the Mayor's Office in Long-Term Planning and Sustainability. He is the lead author of a report that I happen to have in front of me called Exploring Electric Vehicle Adoption in New York City. Also with us is Dr. Tom Turrentine, Director of the Plug-in Hybrid Electric Vehicle Research Center at UC Davis in California. Tom, one of the main components of EV batteries is lithium, isn't it?
Yes.
Where does most of the world's lithium come from?
Well, right now, Chile is probably the largest supplier, although China certainly has its own. Most of the locations of the lithium are salt deposits where at high altitude areas where water evaporates over a long time, and you get this concentration of these lithium salts. Lithium's a common element, but it's found more densely in these particular areas. So this sort of Altiplano area of Bolivia, Argentina, Chile, also high plateaus in China, a little bit of desert areas in the United States. There was some small deposits there. So it's found in those regions. That's the easiest lithium to obtain.
Well, before the earthquake in Chile, that sounded like a pretty safe supplier.
Yeah.
Bolivia may be a bit more troubled. Would we see similar kinds of problems that we see where so many of the suppliers of petroleum are countries that have create political problems for the United States?
Well, I don't want to speak to that. Certainly Chile and Argentina aren't problematic partners in this. So I don't see that problem for the U.S. in the long run. And there has been some questions about supply, although, sort of more recent surveys seem to indicate the level of lithium actually used in a battery is pretty small. So even though it's called a lithium battery, as a percentage of the weight of the battery, it's pretty minor. So it's a small use of the lithium. So
but isn't lithium dangerous for the environment?
No.
Oh.
It's not a toxic chemical. Usually it's bound up as a salt.
Why have we found it so hard to produce batteries that can last longer? I would have thought by now, with all the money that's been thrown into this research, we would have come up with something that could take us more than 40 miles.
Well, that batteries, not being a battery expert, but watching over the years, the batteries have made improvements. Lithium batteries seem to be improving their energy density and power at 5, 6, 7% a year right now. So there are improvements. It does tend to improve more slowly. If you can imagine these batteries, if we want them to last 10 years, the sort of research that requires us to understand that battery is going to last 10 years in a vehicle and store the amount of electricity it needs to store it's a slower research process than some other areas, and has not had until now. There we may see change, because until now there has not been quite the level of investment, at least in automotive-grade lithium batteries. And there seems to be quite a flurry of interest right now, with maybe even hundreds of companies entering the competition.
Neil, what do you see as the major issues that we have to face if we wind up producing a lot of electric cars that a lot of people want to buy?
I mean, I think the first challenge will be just kind of the education, actually, before you actually get into problems of once you see a lot on the road. I think I'm most concerned about how we actually get those vehicles on the road. And I think, you know, educating consumers is going to be pretty critical, because this is something that they actually have no real idea how to use. You know, when people made the conversion from a normal internal combustion engine to a Prius, that's almost exactly the same vehicle experience. This is a pretty different experience. And so you're going to have, I think, a lot of potential concerns from consumers, you know, things like vandalism if they're parking it on the street and charging it on the street, even in their in a commercial garage. Will the battery explode? Will it set on fire? Things
some people
like
say
that.
They have memory problems.
And it, and because people believe that their laptop batteries or their cell phone batteries have the same problem, you know, and I think that kind of broad consumer education is going to be pretty critical in the next few years.
A couple of listeners have asked whether we're just switching from the oil needed by regular cars to the coal needed to produce the electricity for EVs, and whether that's actually any greener. Do you, well, either of you want to address that?
Sure. The That is a serious concern in some of the areas of the world. I mean, you can think of China as producing a lot of electricity with coal. The United States produces a lot of electricity with coal. Germany produces a lot of electricity with coal. Some of these areas, those, although there is sort of a thought about over the next, the same sort of period of time as we think we might bring electric vehicles into the main market, that there will be some greening of that production, either shifting to natural gas or nuclear or some other source, or cleaning up of coal. We have to sort of do that at the same time. So the hope is, at least with electricity, you can green it. It's quite difficult to green combustion of petroleum in vehicles.
Just one more thing, Neil. The president has talked about all of the economic advantages of investing in green. Should we be giving people tax breaks as they do in some countries if they buy these cars?
So there already exists a tax break. The federal government, the Obama administration, has put together a $7,500 per vehicle tax credit.
Copenhagen even allows people to park free in Midtown if they have a hybrid car.
That's right. Copenhagen's doing two major things. One is they're waiving the very large tax on vehicles, which is, you know, between $20,000 to $30,000 per vehicle, which is not insignificant, obviously. And the second thing that they're doing is encouraging parking by having free parking spaces. I think this goes back to kind of one of the earlier points I was making, is that from the city's perspective, electric vehicles fits into a larger sustainability set of sustainability goals. And so while it has clear benefits in terms of reducing emissions, we, you know, there are other things that we could be doing that we are doing that similarly are reducing emissions. And so going too far to offer incentives like tax incentives, parking incentives and the like, especially when, you know, our research shows that consumers don't necessarily clamor for that right now, I think would be a misstep, especially in the early days.
I want to thank the two of you so much for being with us. Neil Parikh, Senior Policy Advisor at the Mayor's Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability. He is the lead author of a study called Exploring Electric Vehicle Adoption in New York City. And Tom Turrentine, Director of the Plug-in Hybrid Electric Vehicle Research Center at UC Davis in California. I'm surprised that they talk about anything but wine at UC Davis. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.